Thanks for coming to this session. I'm really excited that you guys are here to listen to Hackathon. This is the technology we have been working for 4 years, and this is gonna be in SQL 14, so this is really exciting times for us. My name is Sunil Agarwal. I'm a program manager with SQL Server team. I've been with Microsoft for 10 years, and as I said, I'm really excited to be here. Before I proceed, can you just show me by raising your hand how many of you have been to overview session that we had yesterday? Okay, approximately 50 to 60% of you have been to overview session. So what I'll do is I have one slide which will just recap what Hackathon value proposition is, and then what we will do, we will dive into how do you create tables which are memory optimized, how do you access those, what is the concurrency, and how do you migrate your application. Those are key things. And there's a session that I have tomorrow which will go into the storage, because not only it's in-memory tables, but we provide full durability. It's not like you shut down the server, your data is gone. It is fully asset properties, right? So a lot of people, when they think of in-memory, they say, you know, what happens if the system crashes, if there's a corruption? So key thing to remember is, with in-memory technology, you have full control on data durability. In fact, we will provide an integration with Always On, so you can have full failover, and that kind of functionality is not available at this time in CTP1, but it'll be available in CTP2. So that's the thing. And please feel free to ask questions, because my goal is to understand where the issues are, and I will try to answer those questions. And if the question becomes too detailed, we can take it offline. Sounds good? Okay. So Hackathon recap. So what we have is we know based on the hardware trends that we are seeing, you have machines available with lots of physical memory. Agree? I mean, you are seeing machines, right? And what we are seeing is, in many, many cases, the OLTP database can in fact fit into physical memory, okay? Now, there are, some of you will say, no, my database is terabytes, it cannot fit in physical memory, and understood. But the point is, you may have parts of your application that are performance hog. I mean, they're not performing well. So what we are saying to you is, you do not have to move all your database into memory. What you can do, you can say, these three tables are the performance critical tables for my database. Let me just move those tables to in memory, and rest of 1,000 tables can stay the way they are. So the key point is, we just have to move the tables that are performance critical. And the way we achieve performance is, we have optimized the access to those tables, the storage to those tables, in a way that we can get extreme performance, and you will see that. And what we have seen is, in many cases, we are able to get like 10x, in some cases, like the Bevan is a customer that is in production with Hackathon technology, they're getting 25x. So that kind of a numbers we are getting. So it is optimized for in-memory. Second thing what we have done is, to make things run much faster, what we have done, right, if you take a SQL stored procedure, right, a lot of you, I mean, everybody has SQL stored procedures, right, and you compile them, right, say, create stored procedure, it optimizes, it compiles. But the key difference with today's technology is, when you optimize the SQL Server stored procedure and you execute that, it is interpreted. What it means is, we compile the stored procedure at a very high level of operators. For example, you have a select star from join of two tables. So the query plan that you see will look like join operator, and then it has two child feeding it. One is a scan of table T1, which is assumed that was a table T1 in your join, and the table T2, and then what execution happens is, open table T1, get the next row, and then join, right? So this is how it is executed today, and it is quite fast. I mean, many applications run extremely fast with this mode. But what we did was, we said, instead of interpreting the stored procedure tree, why don't we convert that? I mean, this is actually pretty amazing. We convert that to a C program, and then use a C compiler to create a DLL. So now when you execute the stored procedure, it is not interpreting, it is running in machine code. And that's what we call native stored procedures. Okay? And what we have seen by doing that, we are able to reduce the number of instructions needed to execute the stored procedure, and that makes it run even faster. Okay? This is actually a pretty huge thing for us. Third thing what we have done, this is actually, let me ask you this. How many of you have locking, latching issues in your application? Just, right? I mean, this is a common thing. And it is not a, it's not a bad thing in a way, because databases by definition are concurrent, right? So locking and latching will happen because concurrent data access has to be done, right? What we have done is we have, with the in-memory technology, we have moved away from locking and latching. And the way we were able to do it, because we know data lives in physical memory, we do not need pages. And it's a longer discussion, but the thing about this is the storage format of in-memory data is very different than what it is with SQL Server, traditional SQL Server, okay? So we have moved away from latching. It's all optimistic control. So with that, you can scale well, right? And there are many application patterns. I mean, there is a, my favorite example is last page insert, right? I mean, if you have a increasing clustering key and a lot of people are inserting rows in the increasing clustering key order, they all hit the last page, and what happens, you have a latching contention. And we have seen it does not scale beyond 12 or 16 cores, right? So those kind of problems just go away. So what we are providing is, with in-memory technology, friction-free scale-up. And this is actually very important in today's terms, because now you're getting machines with 256 cores. The question is, I have 256 cores available in my machine, how do I take advantage of that? If I do not scale beyond 16 for certain patterns, that's not good. But with in-memory technology, you can scale. Yeah. The fourth thing, which is very important again, that in-memory technology is part of SQL Server. It is not a new product. It is an engine that sits inside SQL Server. And we have integrated in such a way that all the tools, all manageability is all integrated. So it's not a new product. All you have is a very seamless experience. You have a database that you use today. You can say, I'm going to migrate these two tables to in-memory. You just move those two tables to in-memory. Now what you have is the same database. It's not a new database. Same database, two tables in-memory, rest are regular database tables, and you're working. And you can just do the backups and the log backups. Everything just works without changes. So this is the power of integration. Diagnostics, the DMVs, everything is all integrated, right? So that's the solution that we are providing with in-memory technology. Any questions so far? I'll be happy to take questions, or I go into the next slide. Okay, good. So the question is, I mean, we all know how data is managed or stored for SQL Server today. What we have is, you create a table, and then you insert rows. And what happens underneath, SQL Server is packaging those rows into pages, right? Pages are 8K size. And then you can pack rows and on, right? But with in-memory technology, we know the data is in memory, so we do not have to package them in a page. So let's see how you create a in-memory table. So here, what you have is a DDL for the create table, and a few things stand out. First, you see that I have a new kind of index called hash index. So remember, like in SQL Server today, you have cluster index and non-cluster index. All are B trees, right? We are introducing a third kind of an index. It's a non-cluster index. It's just that it has a hash index, okay? So what we are saying here is, it's a hash index, and hash table, I mean, all of us have used in computer science hash tables, and there's a size, there's a number of buckets. So this is saying, my customer ID has a hash index, it's a primary key, and it has bucket count of 1 million, okay? Now, bucket count is an interesting number. So for example, if you have 10 million rows, and your bucket count is 1 million, if you had a perfect distribution, each bucket will have 10 rows, right? Right? Because, and that is means if I want to search for a row, I get to the bucket and then I search. In the worst case, I have to hop through 10 times to get my row, right? So what we are saying is the number of buckets you should define should be twice the number of rows that you expect, okay? So that way you can minimize the traversal. But that's a detail. So there's a hash index, and I can have multiple hash indexes in my table. So here on the next column name, I have another hash index, all right? So a few things to note here is, this is a new option that we have. It is memory optimized, that's what it says, right? So that's what SQL Server has to know. This is memory optimized. I do not have to use pages. Now when you say that, the data can only live in physical memory. You have to make sure you have enough physical memory for that table. Second thing we have done is, actually this is a very interesting point, durability. It is schema and data. What it means is, if you shut down and restart, you will get the table back, you get the data back. Now for you, for SQL Server users, this is not a news, of course. The data has to come back, and of course the table has to come back, right? We have another option for in-memory tables in which we provide an option schema only. What it means is, when you restart SQL Server, table will get created, but no data. Now, this is a very important scenario. Think about ETL kind of scenario, where you want to load data into a table, but you do not want to do logging. You do not want to do any storage. Why? Because in case something happens, you have the data available to you in a file outside or in a different system, right? So this is what we are providing, a non-durable in-memory table. And this has been an amazing feature. A lot of customers who are doing ETL kind of scenarios, instead of using temp tables today, they can leverage a non-durable table, which is part of in-memory table OLTP, to load the data and to massage the data. So we'd already talked about hash index and the bucket count. And as I said, there are secondary indexes. So this is pretty much what you need to do, what you need to do to say this table is memory optimized. There's a question in the back.
You said it has to fit in memory. What happens if I create my table and it now grows in size so it exceeds memory?
That's right. So this is a common point, right? If the question really is, what happens if my table goes beyond the physical memory we have, right? In that case, we will start failing the insert. So for example, you had 64 gigabyte of physical memory, and in a simplistic case, assume that your table grew beyond 64 gigabyte, yet will start failing. It is not any different where you run out of log space or you run out of disk space. So what we are saying is you have to provision your system appropriately so that you can guarantee that you have enough physical memory. Now, we are providing enough monitoring capabilities to see where memory usage is, so you can, for example, if you're running out of physical memory, one thing you can do, you can add more physical memory in the box and increase the SQL Server max survey parameter to do that. But that's a great point. Yeah, it will hit into a roadblock there. Yeah. So I'll take a question here and then, yeah, carry on.
Just follow up this question. What if, can you limit how much memory those tables use?
That's right. So great question. So this is something what we provide is we can limit. You can say this hackathon database or in memory cannot take more than this much physical memory, and we will just control that. And we do that through resource governor. And this is something, one of the things I should say, that this is product in development. So that memory control thing is not part of CTP1, but it is coming in CTP2. A question here, then I'll move on. Yeah. So the question really is, right, if I have 128 gigabyte of physical memory that I have allocated to my SQL Server, right? You said max server memory, 128. What you can do is, and you have five databases, right? You can say this database has memory optimized tables, and I only want to give 16 gigabyte to this memory optimized table. So what you can do, you can create a resource governor kind of functionality and say this database can only take 16 gigabyte. So rest will not be impacted. Yeah, so we provide those kind of controls. But still, you have to make sure that you have enough physical memory for your database, for your tables, okay?
What's the
That's correct. So this is actually interesting. The question really is that 128 gigabyte that I have for SQL Server, does the hackathon memory comes from that? Answer is yes, because this is an integrated thing, right? So it's the same SQL Server, right? It's just giving memory in a different way. So I'm going to proceed. So think what we do is with the in-memory technology, you have a create table DDL that we just saw. And what we do is we compile that into a C program. Even in the create table, we create a structure in C, and I'm going to show you the structure, how it looks like. It looks pretty amazing that this is what the table is. And we create a DLL, and when create table is successful, the DLL is in the physical memory, right? So that's how we have a table. Unlike regular SQL Server table, which is not a DLL, okay? So what I'm going to do is both memory optimized table and regular SQL Server table are SQL Server tables. So I'm going to use term memory optimized to refer to these tables, and I'm going to use disk-based tables to refer to traditional SQL Server table. Now, when I use the word disk-based, it is misleading in the sense even memory optimized tables need to be stored on the disk to recover from crashes and corruptions, right? So just for a simplification, memory optimized means this. Disk-based means what we know and love, the page-based tables, right? Okay. So now the question is, how do we store the data in physical memory, right? So remember, memory optimized tables are not page based, okay? So they are just in memory, okay? So we are storing them as rows, not as rows within a page, okay? So what I have here is a table, and actually this is a very interesting slide and we should spend some time on it. So this row has some headers, okay? This is headers, and it has two columns, name and a city, okay? Simple table. And I have created a hash index on it, on name, okay? So here, the first bucket, if you will, is pointing to a row with a timestamp 200 comma infinity. What it says to me is that this row was created by a transaction with ID 200, number one. And infinity means that this row is a current row. That means this row exists today. It was created at time T200, and it exists today. So if I do a select star from this table, I will see this row, right? The yellow row that you see, it says it was created at time 90, and it was deleted at time 150, okay? So that means if at this time, the time is 220, for example, if I do a select star from this table, I will only see the green row because the yellow row does not exist at time 220, okay? So this is, we achieved that through row versioning, and I'm going to go into that. But the key point is this timestamp that you're seeing, the 200 comma infinity or 90 comma 150, it is telling you the time slot, if you will, where this row is visible, okay? Now, if I had a transaction that starts at time, say 100, then I will only see the yellow row, not the green row, because green row came into existence at time 200, okay? This is how the data is arranged. Now, let's go beyond this example. So here, what it shows is, before time 200, the row, in fact, was there. What I changed in the row, so think of this, right? I created the row at time 100, and the values were John, Paris. That was the value of this row. At 200, a transaction came and changed Paris to Beijing. Okay, the row got updated. So that means between 100 to 200, the row was John, Paris. After 200, it became John, Beijing. This is the update. All right. Now, in this example, if I start a transaction, let's say at time 110, what I'll see? I'll see row John, Paris, and in fact, I will see row Susan, I can't pronounce that word, Bogota, right? So you see that, right? Think of this, right? The rows are all in the memory organized through hash index, and when the transaction comes, we know the transaction starting point. The transaction starting point in this example is 110. We will all find all the rows that qualify my predicate and are valid for my time. Any questions on that? I know this is a tough concept, but yeah. Right. So first of all, we have a monotonically increasing transaction ID thing, right? So everything is increasing. Now, if a transaction rolls back, we just remove the row from that. Right. So I think the example you're giving is that the transaction at 200 who wanted to update the row rolls back, right? So at that time, it won't be infinity. It will say it is not, it's rolled back. And when the rows come, when the transaction comes there, it will realize this was not the row that is valid. It will go back to the row 100, 200. So let me give a different example, right? So if the transaction that was modifying the row at 200 rolls back, the timestamp for the John, Paris will be 100, infinity because the transaction rolled back, right? Because that is still valid. Okay. Sorry? Correct. Yeah. So let me move on. So here is another thing, right? I have another row attached. So I have a bucket here, first bucket. It points to John. It points to John, Paris, which is the previous version of the row. And it also points to another row, which is not John, which is Jean and Prague. And that row was created at timestamp 50, and it is still valid, right? So what I'm saying is here, there's a collision, right? You have two rows, Jane and John, part of the same bucket chain, right? So this is how the hash index is organized. Now, I can have another index on city. And here, there are two pointers. One is pointing to Beijing, and other one is pointing to Paris. And then there are further pointers. So essentially what happens is you can think of all the rows that are in memory. They are arranged through pointers. And when I'm searching for a row, I go to the right bucket, and I traverse through the chain, and I find it. I just find the rows that are valid for my transaction. Now, once the row becomes old, right? Like in this case, the row was, in this case, if you look at the Susan's row, 90, 150, and let's say time is 300 right now. And I know in my system, there is no transaction active that will need a row from 90 to 150, okay? If I know that there is no transaction active that will need this row, I can garbage collect it, right? So what we do is, periodically, there's a threads running in the background that are garbage collecting it, and it gets garbage collected. So at now time 300, the only rows that I have is John and Jane. Yep. Any row which will not have infinity will be, and there is no active transaction for that will go in garbage. Any row which will not have an infinity is current and doesn't have active transaction will go and garbage. Correct. Yeah. So think of this, right? As rows become old, we keep garbage collecting. You know, we had a functionality. We, in fact, have a functionality, snapshot isolation or read committed snapshot in SQL Server 2005 onwards. And there also, when the row versions get created, they get garbage collected periodically. And what happens is all SQL Server has to do is to know, are there transactions that are interested in this older row version? If there is no transaction in that older version that needs that older version, we just remove it, right? So this is exactly what's going on here. Okay, so this is how the data is arranged. And at this time, we only have hash index, and we are working on range index as well. So you will be able to query, give me all employees or any range kind of query. Yeah. So the question really is, why John and Jane are essentially two different names, why they are linked to the same bucket, right? So this is a typical hashing thing, right? When you hash a value, like hash a name in this case, it can map to the same hash value, right? John and Jane in this example mapped to the same hash value, so they get mapped to the same bucket. But in a most common case, they will go to the different buckets. Yeah. So there are some limitations, and one of the things to remember is SQL Server, T-SQL surface area is huge. It has been developed since 94 onwards, right? What we are doing is for in-memory tables, we wanted to not implement everything that we have. We said, let's focus on OLTP. And these are some restrictions, and let me just walk through those. We do not provide, for memory optimized tables, there are no DML triggers available, okay? Number two, we do not support XML and CLR data types. Now what it is if you think about OLTP workloads, typically do not have XML data type, and we do not have CLR. So those are the two limitations there. Second thing is the row size. If you look at SQL Server, the row size is 8,060 bytes. We support the same size for in-memory tables. The difference is in SQL Server, you can have off-row columns. So if I have like varchar 800, if the row is not able to fit in that memory on the page, it can just go to, it can be stored off-row. So we do not have off-row for in-memory tables. Now, it seems like a big restriction, but if you think of an OLTP workload, the typical row size is 200, 300 bytes. Let me ask, just to validate, how many of you have row size greater than 8,060 bytes? I see one or two hands, right? Now, if you have a situation like that, I mean, it is possible that not all columns are accessed in your performance critical path. You can, in fact, break the table into two parts, one for in-memory and one for, right? So there are ways to do it, but that's a limitation. And the third thing, which I think is scoping limitations, which some of you will say this is critical for you, we do not provide primary key, foreign key constraint on the memory optimized table, okay? Now, if it is an issue, then you can implement that through a logic, because primary key, foreign key constraint that is inbuilt inside SQL Server, what it does is you cannot really insert a row into a foreign key table unless there's a primary key in a previous table, right? So you can have some changes to your logic to do that. So these are the kind of restrictions that you have, and there are workarounds for some of these, and we have been working with many, many customers, and they are fine changing their application with these limitations. Now, other key point to remember is, even though these are limitations, the key point is not all of your application is moving to in-memory, right? Only your performance critical tables are moving to in-memory. Now, so we have, yeah, question.
When you say initial release there, are you talking about 2014?
I'm talking about 2014, yeah. So what we have done is we wanted to come out in a very targeted scenario, OLTP scenario, and wanted to provide the surface area that can satisfy most customers, and we will continue to iterate on that. Now, so now I have created memory optimized tables, right? How do I access it? The good thing is you can access them using the same tools that you have today, namely the T-SQL, okay? So no changes. And so what you can do is, there are two ways we provide to access a memory optimized table. One, we provide using a normal T-SQL that you have. So if you were using a stored procedure select star from table T1, and you decide to move that table T1 to in memory, the same select star will continue to work, okay? What it is it is we call a interop mechanism. Interop mechanism means that you can continue to use same SQL to access your memory optimized table, okay? So what it means is all you have to do, migrate your table to in memory, and your application will continue to work without changes. Okay, so that's interop mode, very useful. Second mode that we provide, like I was telling you, that we can compile the stored procedure into machine code for faster execution. So this is what we provide. We provide a way to create a stored procedure which is native. So here, what you see is, it's like a simple create stored procedure that you have, like you have a SQL, except you are saying it is native compilation. What it means is, I'm going to convert this code into C and create a DLL out of that, right? So that's what it is saying. Now, when we are compiling these things, we want to have all the options, all session level settings available at the compile time so that we can optimize it. So second thing that we have done is you have to say schema binding. What schema binding is saying that if the stored procedure is referencing, say, 5 tables, you cannot really drop those tables until you drop the stored procedure. Now, in a production environment, you don't drop tables that are being accessed by these stored procedures, but this removes any runtime checks that stored procedure has to do. So schema binding. And we need to know the context of the caller. So you have to specify it is execute as owner. And then the code that you have inside the stored procedure is atomic. So it is, you think of it as like a save point. When I call the stored procedure, the whole thing either happens or does not happen. So it's an atomic thing for the whole thing. And then these are session level settings, what isolation level I'll be executing as, and the language. So this is what you need to specify for your native stored procedure. And the native stored procedure goes through same things. You create a DLL, it optimizes, it uses the same optimizer that you have for SQL Server, optimizes that, and then it creates a DLL, I mean, converts into C code, and the DLL is generated, and that's what it is. So essentially what happens is when you have in-memory table, in for both table and the stored procedure, the native stored procedure, you have DLLs, and when I execute that, it just executes the C code, and you get high performance query response time. Now, as I said, we have two modes to access in-memory tables, and in the interpreted T-SQL, which is the blue box, what it provides is that you can have a scenario where you have two tables. I'm going to use word T1 and T2. You can say T1 is my memory optimized table and T2 is my disk-based table, okay? In an interop way, you can say select star from T1 comma T2 and you have a join predicate. So what it means is that with interop, you can access memory optimized tables and disk-based tables together. There is no restriction, okay? And which is important because you don't want to change your application. Second thing is, it is less performant in the sense it is not optimized into machine code, right? It is not as optimized as a native stored procedure is. And the good point about interop is, it is almost the full T-SQL surface area that you have available to you. So this is actually our customers are using interop way as a first step to migrate application from disk-based tables to memory-optimized tables. Okay. While native on the other side, there's a limitation in the sense, if you access a table inside native stored procedure, it has to be memory-optimized table. So if I go back to the example T1 comma T2, if T2 was disk-based table, I could not use that table in my native stored procedure. The only way I could use that table would be make T2 also memory optimized, right? It gives you maximum performance because we compiled the code, and there are some limitations in terms of T-SQL surface area. Now, the T-SQL surface area that we have defined, what we have done is we have found common operations people do for their OLTP workload, and those are the T-SQL construct that we support. And for some that we do not support, we have workarounds available for many of those. Now, when to use these things? So interop is a very good way for ad hoc queries, right? Because there is no stored procedure, right? So that's one common case. Second case is reporting queries. Because remember, with the native stored procedures, the surface area is limited. But with interop, there is no limitation, so you can use any complex query that you want, like data warehouse kind of query, so there is no limitation. Now, why would you use interop? In many cases, and this is a demo that we did in a foundational session on Monday, if you have a latch contention, all you need to do is move your table to memory optimize, and your application runs as is, and you remove the latch contention, right? So you can see significant performance gains. And we have seen in many cases where just by moving the table to memory optimize, not changing any code, you took care of latching, and suddenly your throughput has gone much, much higher. In many cases, we have seen 5x gain just by moving the table. But native is very useful. Let's say you do not have any contention in your application. No contention, so no latching issues. But you're running 100% CPU because you're using the maximum capacity of the box. So what you can do now is you can say, I'm going to migrate my logic, which is in stored procedures, into native. Now I can execute the same stored procedure, let's say, in one-third the instructions, right? If I can execute my logic in one-third the instructions, that means my throughput will go up 3 times, right? Because instead of taking 100%, one-third will take only 33%. And now I have 66% available in my CPU, so I can push more logic. So this actually has been a very important scenario for us for read scale out. So if you have a read scale out where you have, you know, 6 SQL server which are pushing the read workload, you know, and it happens in a, if you have read-only database available for your web form and everything. So instead of scaling out 6-way, you can even do 1 server or 2 servers because we can provide much more throughput with native compile stored procedures. So let me now switch to demo and show you some of the things about native stored procedures. So here, everybody can see it in the back row? Okay, good. So what I will show you is, I go in this case, I have already created the database. And one thing that you should see in the syntax is that this create database statement is like what we do today. This is no changes to the create database statement, right? What we have done here is, if I want to add memory optimized table to this database, what we do is we add a memory optimized file group. Notice here I'm saying add a file group to this database which contains memory optimized data. That's what we do. We have a separate storage container for memory optimized table. So it contains memory optimized data, and then I add a file to it. So this is where I've done, right? So if I go back to my Object Explorer, and this is something I want to show you in terms of integration with the SQL Server. If I look at the properties of this database, it says, I'll go to the file groups here, right? So it says this database has a file group which is memory optimized, all right? And if I go here, it says how much memory is allocated to memory optimized object. So we are tracking the memory that is being used in this database by memory optimized object. And this is available not only through Management Studio, it is available through DMVs and so on. Okay, so that's what we have done. So I'm going to close this guy. And then what I have is, let me go to my database, F5. And I have created a table here. So what this table is showing me is that it is a sales order table, and I have one index with a bucket count of 2 million, okay? That's a table with memory optimized. And for this demo, I have already created that table. So if I want to know through catalog view which tables are memory optimized, it says sales order table is memory optimized, right? Now let's do this. Let's insert some rows into this table. So let me delete all the rows in this table. I think there's nothing, right? And I'm going to insert 500,000 rows into this table, okay? Notice I'm using interop, right? This is a no native stored procedure interop. And all I'm doing is, right, all the constructs that you are used to, like loops at the loop, do the insert, right? So I'm going to insert the rows. And while it is inserting, when I created this table, it was, durability was on. So I was able to load 500,000 rows in 4 seconds, right? You see here, In 4 seconds, I was able to load that many rows. Okay? And I'm going to do the same experiment with same schema of a disk-based table. And you see the difference. So this is good. And now I'm going to create a disk-based table. And I have one cluster index, exactly the same. I create the table. Now I'm going to insert the same loop, but I'm inserting the rows into the disk-based table. I go here. So it takes approximately, previously it took 4 seconds. This will take around 12 to 14 seconds. Let's see how long it takes. So right there you see on my laptop, which is not a production quality machine, we are able to insert data that much faster. So it took, like, in this case, 14 seconds. Right? So I'm not doing any magic. I just said the same schema, same table in memory, and I'm using interop. So this is actually an interesting point. Without even doing my native sort procedure, I'm able to get this kind of performance for my load. Right? And in this case, the data is fully logged. Okay? So the next thing I want to show you is I can do the queries. Right? So I'm going to do query, say select top 100 from this table. Right? And notice, I'm getting the data in all random order. You know why it is so? Because it is in hash table. So it is starting from the first hash bucket coming down. Right? If I had done this thing for B-tree, it would have started from the left page forward. Right? So you will see data in an ordered fashion. You see that? Okay. If I want to see in ordered way, all I have to do is order ID. Now I see order ID. And imagine this, right? I'm scanning like top 100 rows, and I'm sorting it and everything else, right? This is all that is going on. Now let me delete the rows from my memory optimized tables. Sales order is memory optimized. It got done 0, 0. I mean, it got done under 1 second, right? I'm going to delete the same number of rows in my SQL table. I go back here. And notice it's going to take time. So one of the things to come away from this demo is, number one, memory optimized tables from a user perspective, they are same as regular disk-based table, right? Same kind of syntax. But even on my laptop, you see such a huge difference in terms of insert performance, in terms of delete performance. So that's the starting point. And I'm not even using right now the native stored procedures, right? Okay, so I deleted everything. Now what I'm going to do is, here is a stored procedure. This is the native stored procedure. In this case, I have already created the stored procedure. So before I do anything, I want to show you how does the C code look like, right? So I will go to my directory here and go here. And so I'm going to show you this. This is T underscore 5. This is the table as it looks to C code. Okay, so I'm going to open this. I just want to show you, not for you to follow it, but this is how, once I created a table, this is the code that was generated for that table. Okay, and you will notice here, and I'm going to, that this is how the table looks like. I'm going to go here. This is how the table looks like. It has like three columns, which is like a structure in a C program. So as I said, it looks very different. But that's how we do with this DLLs. So let me do this, minus, and I'm getting out of here. Don't save. And even I want to show you the stored procedure. This is the stored procedure, just for a very quick thing. Open with, no, okay, let's see. Sorry, I want to go to this, the C code. Notepad, and here, this is my stored procedure. So the key takeaway is, right, we are not interpreting our T-SQL code, we are converting them to C and compiling. So this is actually looks pretty hairy code, but that's what that does gets done underneath the covers. I don't know about you, but when I first saw it, I was saying, man, this is what SQL Server code looks like underneath. This is actually pretty amazing. Okay, so that much on that. Now I'm going to go back to, remember how much time it took to insert 500,000 rows through interop? It was around 4 seconds, right? I'm going to do the same thing through native. And you would expect it should go faster, right? Okay. So the stored procedure is already created. And notice, it is inserting 500,000 rows, right? And I assume I dropped all the rows from this table. I think that is true. Let me just make sure it is. Yeah, there's no rows here. I go back, and I'm going to execute the stored procedure. Now it is, for whatever reason, this is the funny thing in my demo. Sometimes it is some kink. It should not be taking 7 or 8 seconds. It should go much faster. But so I'm going to, it's a bit embarrassing right now. in my case, it took like 2 seconds. And I tried a few times this morning, and it's not going to listen to me here now. So it's done. Okay. Let me do one thing just for the heck of it, and so that you at least trust me on that. I'm going to delete all the rows and run it again. Okay. It did, right? And if you think I'm lying, let me just do count sort. So this is actually the build that I have. It is not the build that is coming out for CTP1 because CTP1 is going to be end of this month. So there were a few kinks. And as I said, the behavior sometimes becomes, I can't explain it. And I'm going to do count sort here. I mean, it looks insane in the sense I execute the procedure and before I finish my statement, the rows were inserted, right? Not the first time. First time it took 27 seconds. I don't know why, but yeah, okay. Sorry, question. Right. That's right. That's right. So this, I'll come to your question, sir. So the question really is, what is this magic? Why it is going so much faster? I mean, I understand data is in physical memory. I understand your native compile, but this does not look real, right? You agree on that point? It does not look real. So let me. I have 30 minutes, but let me walk through that, right? So think of your current database, SQL database. Let's say it is 24 gigabyte. I'm just picking a number, 24 gigabyte SQL Server database. And let's say your physical memory in the box is 64 gigabyte. And for now, assume the whole database is in physical memory. Assume that. And now if I do a query which says, give me an employee with employee ID 10, okay? Now, any DBA or any application developer would have created an index on employee ID, agree? Okay, so employee ID index is there. So when I search for employee ID, say 10, I need to first go to the root of the index tree, right? What root of the index tree is doing is there's a page and it has a bunch of rows. You open the page, then you say go to the next page, like next level. So it is going down the index tree, right? In a typical large systems, the index tree could be 5 levels deep, right? So what you're doing is, even though everything is in physical memory, you are walking down 5 pages, right? Now you get to the leaf page, and that's a leaf row, right? Now if the columns that you're looking for in your query are not covering columns, what you need to do? You need to traverse the cluster index. So essentially what we are doing is, in a traditional disk-based system, even though everything is in physical memory, you are walking through all these pages and searching and then latching and everything. It takes time. What we have done with in memory is hash table. You hash on employee ID, you directly go to the row. So you can see I am not spending as many instructions to get to it. And what we did an experiment. We had a TPC, have you heard of TPCC, which is a kind of a OLTP workload? There's another version of a TPCE. We took a workload, it one transaction, we said let's run the same transaction on disk-based tables and run the same transaction on memory-optimized table. We found disk-based table, number of instructions were around 1 million, it was like 980,000 instructions, okay? For the same query or same transaction, it took like 40,000 instructions. So you can see we are taking so many fewer instructions, that makes it so much faster, okay? So I think with this, let me move on to, there's another interesting thing that I want to talk about, and I will actually skip this one in favor of the presentation because we are a bit constrained on time. Okay, so far, memory optimized table, native stored procedures and the performance you have seen. Does that look exciting to you? I mean, you guys, yeah, I think it is actually pretty exciting. We have seen, as I said, many customer workloads running faster. And I think to me, you know, think of a latching problem. As a program manager, I've worked with many customers. A latching problem typically means you have to rewrite your application or you have to change the logic of your application to get rid of that problem. Now imagine this, all you had to do was take the table and move into in-memory. The only requirement that we have for you is to make sure that you have enough memory for your table, right? Now, if your table is terabyte, that's a different deal, but most of the time, tables are not that big and it can fit in physical memory and it can guarantee it, right? It's such a simple way to get higher performance for your application. Now, yes, question. So the question really is, can I just move part of my table or the whole table? So this actually is a very common question. So at this time, we do not support partition tables that have one partition as memory optimized and rest as SQL, because that will be the ideal solution, right? I have a table, partition table in SQL Server today. I know my latest partition is the most active partition, and I want to optimize that for physical memory. Could I just not say that this partition is memory optimized and rest is not? So that we don't support and for this SQL 14, but you can get around that problem by creating a view. I'm not saying it is the most elegant solution, but you can get around that way. I'll take one more question, then I'm gonna go forward because I have tons of things to do. And carry on, sir. Right.
How much memory
do
we need to estimate for the table
to be Right. So the question really is, how much memory do I need, right? So first thing is, if I have 10 columns in my disk-based table, I have 10 columns in my memory-optimized table, right? So on a ballpark, whatever the column storage you need for disk-based table, you need the same storage for your memory optimized table. So if I have a 16 gigabyte table in SQL Server, I need comparable storage for memory optimized table. Now there are two differences. Remember, in a disk-based table, data is fragmented, right? Pages are never fully full, right? I may have 50% fill factor. In memory optimized, there are no pages, so you can pack the rows much, much better, right? You agree? Second thing is, our indexes, the way we manage indexes in memory optimized table is very different. For example, I'm gonna make a little bit extreme example, but you get the idea. So let's say I have a table with 16 columns, okay? And I have created 5 indexes on those tables. and each index has two column as keys. Okay, so I have 5 indexes, each index has 2 column keys. So basically I have 10 columns that are part of my index keys, right? Like 2 for each index. So essentially what you're doing is you have 16 column table and you're having a second copy of 10 columns. With memory optimized indexes, since it is hash based, we don't store keys as part of the index. So we don't have index storage is much, much lower. So the point is, in general, what we have seen, the storage taken by in-memory table is much lower than what you have for memory disk-based tables. So if I'm migrating a table which is, I know in my disk-based table it is 16 gigabyte, we are saying, okay, so that's pretty much, you can just take that as a ballpark and say that's what memory you need. Now, because we have row versions, right? In SQL Server snapshot isolation, the row versions are kept in tempdb, but here we are keeping row versions inside memory optimized database. So we are saying, in the worst case, have twice. So we have some guidelines, and there'll be a white paper on that. So you get the idea on that, right? Okay. Now let me move on to that. We have only 20 minutes. I think this is a very important topic, the transactions. Let me walk through this one. So actually, it is interesting that you talked about multi-versioning, and I think it is coming here. So if you have non-blocking protocol, like, I mean, you do not want to block, right? In a traditional SQL Server, what happens if I'm modifying the row, right? What do I have? I have exclusive lock on that row. If you want to select the row, you have to wait because I'm modifying it, right? Now, the only way to have a non-blocking access is to have a row version, right? This is pretty much what we provided with snapshot isolation or RCSI, right? So we have multi-versioning even with memory optimized table. However, we are not using tempdb for multi-versioning. So we keep the row versions. Remember the first picture that I showed where you had John, Paris, and Beijing, because all those versions are sitting in the hash table. Everything, so if I look at a hash index at a given time, let's say I have 10 rows which are real rows for my table. There may be some rows which are the older row versions, but they're part of the table, right? So let's say I have 5 older versions and 10 latest rows. So how many rows I have in my hash table? 15 rows. So when I scan for my transaction, all SQL Server is doing is, okay, for this transaction, I know what the timestamp is. I'm gonna go through everything and I'm gonna only go to the rows that meet the timestamp criteria. You see that? So I will only get the rows, but everything sitting inside the same hash table. Now, the transaction isolation that we support in memory optimized table is snapshot isolation, but it is not based on tempdb. It is, as I said, we keep its own. No locks, no latches, and because no locks, no latches, there is very little context switch. I mean, this is a bit geeky point. So what happens in SQL Server, right? I'm running a transaction and I say get a lock. If I have to wait, what happens is that transaction or the thread gets off the CPU, some other thread comes, right? So there are a lot of context switches. But if I do not have to wait for locks, I just keep going, so it minimizes the context switches. That is going back to the point that you're mentioning, why it is faster. What we have done is, it's like the term well-oiled machine. I mean, what we are trying to do is, any weights we have in the system, can we remove them? If we remove the weights, we can go much faster, right? Because CPU is not changing, CPU is still the same, but we are just doing things more efficiently. Now, the question now is, if I don't take lock, I don't even take update lock. So I'm coming, I'm updating the row. You are coming, you're updating the row. You're not aware that Sunil is updating the row. You just see the row as it exists, right? So what we do is we allow you to update, right? So both guys updated the row, but only one person will succeed. Okay, so what we do in the end, we validate. So the first person who commits is successful, the second guy has to roll back. It's almost like deadlock detection. Remember, like when the deadlock happens, one guy is chosen as a victim. So we have a conflict detection and we figure out, okay, you stepped on another transaction. Now, it can be a problem. That means my transaction is getting rolled back. But in a typical OLTP environment, you do not get that kind of conflict. You do not step on each other, right? What we step on each other is my row and your row goes to the same page. Because it is going to the same page, I need to get a latch, right? So I'm inserting row 10, you're inserting row 11 on page P1. I latch page P1, I'm inserting my row 10, and you're coming, you say, hey, I need to latch page P1, but Sunil has a latch on P1, it waits, right? So that kind of wait we see. It's not that Sunil and you are updating the same row. It happens, I'm not saying it does not happen, but it's not as common. So we have a conflict detection. Now, we are saying that since we have a non-blocking protocol, we are supporting three isolation levels: snapshot, repeatable read, serializable. Now, one common question people ask, hey, what about read committed? Because that's my isolation level, right? Now, think of this. Read committed is a default isolation level for SQL Server, right? 99% we have data because we have a lot of monitoring that we do for the customer application. 99% customer applications use read committed isolation level, right? Now, snapshot is a superset of read committed. So if you are using read committed, your application will continue to work fine with snapshot isolation, with this snapshot isolation, right? Now, there are certain applications that depend on blocking, right? There are applications that do not want row versioning, they want to block. Those kind of applications cannot use memory optimized table, but that's a rarity. And the reason I'm saying it is because when we implemented, how many of you are using RCSI, a read committed snapshot? Only very few. So what RCSI does, it provides a non-blocking implementation of read committed isolation level, okay? Now, there are applications that depend on blocking. They do not work with RCSI. So we were concerned about that point. So we actually had a blog, we had articles, and we found only a couple of customers complained that their application did not work because of that. So it's not as common as at least we started off with. So these are the isolation levels we support. So here is the scenario that I was describing to you, the write-write conflict. Here I have two transactions, T1 and T2. And remember the green guy is updating the row with keys C2 is equal to 1, 2, 3, and the red guy is also gonna do the same thing, right? So what happens is now, once this happens, both are proceeding forward. So the green guy updated the row. Now red guy comes and it wants to update the row. When it goes to the row, it knows it was already updated by the green guy. So it fails right there. You see that? So that transaction will fail. That means you have to put a logic in your code to say, if I fail because of write-write conflict, I need to retry, right? So that's a change you have to do. And I have an example that shows you how you can make that kind of a change. So there is that kind of a complication. Now the point is, those two transactions could fail because of deadlock as well, right? In traditional SQL Server, disk-based tables. So most customers do have a logic to say, if I fail due to deadlock, I have to retry my transaction, right? If you have that kind of a logic, this should just work as it is. So why people use locking hints? They use like no lock, the repeat, like, you know what I'm saying? Because they want to get around the blocking. No lock, right? That kind of thing. But now with memory optimized table, there is no locking, no locking hints. Make sense? Okay. You have to account for failures because of write-write conflict or sometimes validation, right? Now that's a change, and I agree, needs to be done. And as I said, it is gonna cause you some application change if it is in fact a factor. Third, avoid long-running transactions. This is any developer's guide. I mean, even disk-based tables, if you have long-running transactions, you are in trouble in the sense you're holding logs for disk-based tables for a long time, you're holding transaction logs, so on and so forth, right? So those are the guidelines that we have. So now this is the last topic for me, and then we go from here. So remember, we support snapshot isolation, repeatable read, and serializable for memory optimized table. And for disk-based tables, we support read uncommitted, read committed, snapshot, repeatable read, and serializable, right? So there is incompatibility. Right? What do we do? So the question really is, it is not an issue when you are doing native stored procedure, because native stored procedure cannot access tables which are non-memory optimized, right? So how do we manage it? So in the disk-based tables, they have, if you're running your transaction, so you have a database which has disk-based tables and memory-optimized tables, right? If I'm running a transaction that is only touching disk-based tables, nothing has changed for you. Agree? Because, right, that's how it is. If you have a transaction that is only accessing memory-optimized tables, the only thing is it is supporting snapshot, repeatable read, and serializable. But what if you have a transaction that is not only touching disk-based tables, it is also touching memory-optimized table? Now, how do I deal with that? Because there's a repeatable read. Sorry, I have a disk-based transaction read committed. What do I do now, right? So we have this table. It may look a little bit complicated, but let me walk through, simplify it for you. So you see the first row. If the disk-based transaction is read committed, you can use snapshot for memory-optimized table. Okay? As I said, this is the most common case. And snapshot is a superset of read committed. Right? So for 99% applications, this is just fine. So read committed for SQL transaction. When I say SQL, is the wrong thing. Your session setting is read committed, which is default. And you need to access snapshot in the Hecaton tables or a memory optimized table as snapshot. If you use read committed for your disk-based tables, you can use repeatable read and serializable for your memory optimized table. But if you use repeatable read and serializable for your disk-based tables, you can only use snapshot. Now, this looks like a rule, I mean, makes no sense, why, things like that. And I don't think I can go into a lot of details for that, but the common case that you should think about is my application is using default isolation level. I'm just going to use that, except for my in-memory table, I have to say explicitly snapshot. So when I need to access my memory optimized table, I have to say select star from memory optimized table, snapshot, and then I can get it, right? Because your session level setting is read committed. We don't support, if you have a disk-based table under snapshot, we don't support that transaction with memory-optimized table at this time, right? So there are some limitations like that, okay? But I think the thing that I want you to walk away from is your common scenario is read-committed, and that should work without any problem, okay? You have a question? Let me, okay.
What about the scenario of always on availability group readable secondaries?
Correct.
Right.
Right. So the question really is, how does it work in an always-on scenario? Because in always-on, the readable secondary by default maps everything to snapshot isolation.
Yeah.
Right? The question really is, if I have a readable secondary on a database which has memory-optimized tables and everything is snapshot isolation, and I think in the previous slide I was telling that if you have a snapshot, we don't support access to the memory optimized table, right?
Right.
So that's the question. So always on integration is not available in CDP1, and this is something that we are working with. What we have done is we have done a customer survey. We said, if I give you a non-snapshot rows from memory optimized table without any consistency, is this acceptable? And all customers said that is acceptable. They want a capability to read from secondary. So we will be able to get that, but that is something that we are working through right now. Yeah, okay. So I have a demo, and I know it's like 5 minutes left, so I'm going to skip the demo. Essentially what it is trying to show is, and I'm going to upload the scripts, demo scripts on the TechEd site. What it is trying to show is, how do I code against write-write conflicts and things like that, right? And So before I proceed with more questions, let me just show you one quick slide. Migration examples. This is actually very important. So for example, the retry logic, right? So we have to, as I said, you have to code for conflicts and validation failures, right? So here is an example. I have a stored procedure. This is a T-SQL stored procedure. And it has, let me go through the full thing, okay. I'm gonna stop here, okay. So what it is doing is, it is calling a, in the center you see exact USP my native proc, it is calling the native procedure, right? You see that here? So what we have done is, in this logic, for this stored procedure, I have put A under the try block, and I'm catching the exception, and if it fails because of validation failure write at conflict, it retries. So this is pretty much what you have to do against if you were just executing like this, right? So it is, I'm not saying it is that simple, but it is not that complicated. It's a very simple template that you have to do. Anytime you expect write conflict or validation failure, you put that native stored procedure inside another procedure and handle the exception and to start the procedure again. So that's how you can do it. So that is one example. And I think I should just stop here. And I know we have a few more minutes left. I'll be happy to take more questions. So I will start from you, sir, and then I come to you. Yeah.
How often does
a checkpoint? Okay. So a checkpoint is a very important point because all of you know what checkpoint is, right? In SQL Server, you have to checkpoint so often because otherwise your log cannot get truncated, right? And you have to flush the dirty pages to make reduce recovery time. So what, just like your disk-based tables, we also do checkpoint for memory optimized table. Currently, we do checkpoint every time the log exceeds 1 gigabyte. And right now, the policy is not tuned, but our expectation is it is gonna be integrated with SQL Server checkpoint and the checkpoint will happen. So currently, if you want to know, we do checkpoint every 6 hours or when the log exceeds 1 gigabyte, right? So in today's term, 1 gigabyte log is no big deal, right?
Okay.
So you have a question, sir. That's right. So the question is that for native stored procedures, for native access to your memory optimized table, you need a stored procedure, right? But we also allow interop way, right? So those things should just continue to work. So what we are saying is, this is a very common case with ISVs, right? ISVs do not have stored procedures because they have to work not only with SQL Server, they have to work with Oracle, they have to work with everything else, right? So we are saying, okay, so you just move your table to memory optimized, you still get the benefit of no latching, you still get the access, fast access because of hash indexes and so on. Yeah? Okay. Question? Yes, sir. Right. So let me come to that. Before actually, let me just show one thing here. I have a session tomorrow on the storage, and it will cover about the checkpoints and everything else. Okay. So this is the session I have tomorrow, and I think I hope you can find time to come. So the question really is, what is the limitation on, if I have 2 terabyte physical memory available, can I have 2 terabyte of memory optimized tables? Right now, what we have is the memory optimized tables that are durable can be up to 512 gigabyte for durable. For non-durable, there is no limitation. So we can have that. But what we found is, I mean, there could be some customer case where they need more than that. And our expectation is your 512 gigabyte cannot be the hot part of your database, right? It has to be much lower than that, right? If it was, it would not have worked very well even with SQL Server today, right? Unless you have so much physical memory. So we have a 512 gigabyte limitation for disk-based tables, sorry, for the durable tables, and no limit on the non-durable table, okay? Any other question? I saw some hand here. Yes. Right. So the question is, the column store is a very useful functionality that we have. Will it be supported for in-memory table? Answer is not today, because in-memory tables are focused on OLTP and the column store is focused on data warehouse. However, you can have a database with in-memory tables, disk-based tables with column store. We don't, you see that? Okay. Yes, sir. You touched upon something very, very important. The question really is, remember, we compile the stored procedure. And the question is when it is compiled. It is compiled when you first create it. And let's say I create the stored procedure, and now I shut down my SQL Server. I start again. The stored procedure already exists. At that time, when you first invoke it, at that time, the DLL is loaded. Okay? But the important point is, what happens if the statistics changed over time? If it changed over time, I compile my stored procedure, the plan may not be right. Right? What SQL Server does today for disk-based tables is it recompiles the stored procedure automatically. You don't even know about that, right? I mean, stats changed, it recognizes that, it says, I'm going to recompile the stored procedure. With memory-optimized native stored procedures, recompilation does not happen automatically. Okay? What you have to do is you have to update the statistics, and this is one other limitation that is important. You have to update the statistics and drop the stored procedure and recreate it. Now, this is not the best user experience, I would agree, but this is what we have for SQL 14, and this is something we will be obviously improving over time. Okay. I'll take one question there, then I come here, sir. Yeah. That's right. So the question is, so I know the time is up, so thanks for coming, and I will answer these questions. Please stay. And so the question being asked is, undo, redo those transaction things, and when I shut down SQL Server, how do I load the data? So what we have is, we have the memory optimized table data persisted on disk. So when I restart SQL Server, we have to load the data from the disk into physical memory. So we do that in a parallel way, and what we have found in our experiment, we can load that at the speed of the disk. Okay. There is one question here, and then, yeah.
Why insert the record into memory optimized table? When insert is done, I can assume that the record is on disk as well?
That's right. So when we say commit the transaction, you can be rest assured the data has committed, is durable. Now SQL Server goes down, anything happens, you get the data back. Correct. So I think the question you're asking is, end of the day, your bottleneck will be the commit of the log record, right? That's correct. So I think if my bottleneck is because I'm not writing in log fast enough, that's a good problem to have, because I can have a SSD or higher throughput log device. But your point is excellent point. I think I'll be here. I think I should wrap up because there'll be new speaker. But thanks really for coming, and I hope to see you guys tomorrow. We'll do more checkpointing, how storage works. Thank you so much. Yeah.